Hey guys, welcome to Overcrest. I'm Chris. Jake.
Hey guys. What?
Did you not hear me say?
No,
hey guys?
I didn't hear anything. I did not hear anything from you. I heard the music. It was great.
We're off to a great start.
I heard nothing. Like, you were just there. Oh, you were just standing still. It was really good. I was like, oh, maybe I'm doing the intro this time.
I think your internet.
It's not. You always blame me. It's
Dude,
not.
I
mine.
Just had. I just.
I
talked
can hear
to
the
Patrick
music
Long.
Fine.
Yeah, because those. Dude, I've had multiple interviews. You're the only one.
I know. It's.
You're the only one. So, it's you. It's you live in the middle of nowhere in a van down by the river, essentially. Except it's actually a really nice house down by the river.
And I do have a river. Yeah. So that's accurate. I like it. Yeah. 100%. Well,
just
I'm
wish
Jake.
You get in trouble with. You are Jake. I've got
a fun situation
lined up for us today.
Situation.
And I cursed myself a little bit by. Hold on. Let me turn my heater off. It's going to be loud.
Oh, boy. Okay. Here we go. Oh, yeah. That is better. I was skeptical we could hear it. I was skeptical.
A little
yeah,
bit of,
yeah, no, that was good. That's good.
A little bit
okay.
of little bit of heater noise there. Anyway, so I've been trying to think of some topics. I have a situation, and I cursed myself by launching myself into a black hole.
Oh,
with a question I've got for you, and I gave it to you the other day, so you could kind of maybe think
I
of your
did,
own.
And I didn't do like probably the different. Like tentacles of research. I was thinking like, you know, you go down the rabbit hole, but this is like multiple rabbit holes, right?
Yeah, this
so
was,
I didn't go
this,
down
I,
any
I
rabbit
us
holes.
Into a black hole. My question was, if you could take any object back in time to show a previous historical period, what would it be and when?
Right.
Do you want to go first or do you
really,
want me to go first?
Really good question. Well, let me just tell you a little bit about my thought process here.
Okay.
Because it kind of ranges the gamut. When you say any object, you think technology first, right? Like,
yeah.
I could bring my iPhone back and they'd be amazed at, like, they can watch videos and stuff. But
your
it's
tendency
also,
is to turn yourself, it's to look inward at this and turn yourself into a god, basically. It's like, what could I take back? And then I would just either get burned at the stake or I would run the world. I'd be God. I would run the world. Like, if you took an iPhone back and it had, like, a copy of Wikipedia on it, you would be God.
Yes.
That's
so
the tendency.
Here's the problem, because there is a Arthur C. Clarke quote, okay? And it says...
Who's
Arthur?
Who's Arthur C. Clarke?
He is, I think, a historian or... Okay, basically the quote
you're
is...
You're giving
any,
us a quote from a guy you don't even know who he is. Here's
no
a
idea.
Quote from a guy.
No.
He's a science fiction
Let
writer,
me just tell
an
you,
avid
okay,
popular, a popularizer of space travel and futurist. I love futurists.
Yeah, he's that guy. That guy.
Yeah, he's
but
that
here's
guy.
His quote.
Got it.
Any sufficiently advanced technology will be indistinguishable from magic. So here's the risk that you run. Is if you bring something like an iPhone or something that is too far beyond understanding... You're just going to get burnt at the stake. They're going to be, that's witchcraft. That's
you're
magic.
Does
that's
he
not
sink?
Impressive. That's not impressive. It's just scary and we don't like it. Right?
Yeah.
So
you're going
to
sink
you
when you get
take
thrown
that
in the water.
Into context. Right. You probably will. And so it's like, okay, that's computer / iPhone or something like that.
Yeah, can't take
and I was
the
like,
iPhone.
You could just bring a lighter back to like way prehistoric caveman times, but that's not very impressive because they had like cauldrons where they'd bring coals around and they harnessed fire. Right.
Yeah.
And so then I thought, okay, what about like machinery? Okay. Mm-hmm. So anything from weaponry. So like a gun, like you could just go to some whatever, pick a battle anytime in history and you just have like a machine gun and you're just like, hi, look, I win. I win.
Did I bring an M249 saw back to the crusade?
As long as you bring enough ammo, you win.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So they have no concept of ammo, though. So you could, like, do it once and just be
and
like...
And they would just... Ah! Yes. Yeah, but also, would they even understand?
Again, magic.
Like, that thing's loud and it's making us die. Do they even know that it's bullets and comprehend that? Yeah,
no,
that might
just
be
God.
Magic.
You're just God.
Right. So, and then... There's another concept that you brought up or are
Jake,
going to
question, question,
that I didn't
question.
Think.
Hold on. What would your throne look like?
Would be very tall, Chris. Very high up the ground.
Throne? Yeah, that's just going to make you look smaller, Jake. That's not what you want. that's not good. I feel like I would go back to a period of time, and I'm trying to think of my period of time, maybe. Now, right, I just want Leonardo da Vinci to design my throne. I want it to be like some sort of recliner.
So you're going to the Renaissance?
I don't think recliners. Yeah, I'm going to go with Renaissance, and I don't think recliners existed in the Renaissance. They had rocking chairs, I'm sure. But they didn't have like a lazy boy. Yeah, that would be my recliner. It's a lazy boy from Frasier.
Hold on. That's the technology. That's the object you're bringing back. You're just bringing the chair, and you're like, wait, hold on. Let me pull this lever. Cha-ching! Everyone's like, whoa!
The lazy boy. The best
Chris
invention of the 20th century.
The lazy
century.
Boy back to the Renaissance period. I love that very much. No, the other thing that I hadn't thought of until you brought it up is medicine, right? Like healthcare.
Yeah.
Bringing anything like that back.
The thing is that if you brought penicillin somewhere, and I dove deep into penicillin, okay? So I was like,
okay,
my rule for this that I created for myself to try and tone it down a little bit, because it's just spiderwebs, like you said, is it has to be able to be recreated with technology. I have a whole separate document here that you can't see because I didn't want you to know.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's fine.
You have to be able to bring the object back, and they have to be able to recreate it with the technology they have on hand.
Why?
So you have to be able to teach, because I think otherwise, like you said, you're God or it's magic. Okay. I'm trying to figure out a way that we can mass produce something, right? Let's bring something back that's advanced technology that can be mass produced in an older period of time.
Sure. Did you also go down the rabbit hole of thinking about what the butterfly effect of whatever this is would be?
I did. I went and I said, what can we take back in time? In my head, I'm like, what can we take back in time that would prevent iPhones from ever being invented? Like, what object could
goal.
I take back?
Okay.
Yeah.
Don't.
Then I went, well,
who cares
iPhones.
About
it's
war,
it's the
genocide,
transistor. War,
calling,
genocide, nothing.
Like,
well,
yeah, okay.
I mean,
Hitler,
the iPhone has been a huge problem. Social media,
it
huge
is a problem.
All this
it is a
problem. So I went back and I'm like, how can we prevent the transistor from being invented? And I'm like, we'd have to invent. I mean, we're going to get there anyway. Like, human beings are going to get to that point anyway. But if we could figure out a way to have like mechanical computers or something like that to kind of prevent us from.
Have
those
you
would be
heard
such a huge
the
scale.
Conspiracy theory that transistors are technology from aliens? And the reason that this is thought of is you look at the development of any type of like electronics that we had. There was such a huge leap with the development of the transistor that it was mind-blowing, right? All of a sudden it went from tubes to transistors, and it was like that, and then it went to microcircuitry and microprocessors. Yeah. That leap of technology, they're like, how is this attributed looking at the grand scale
like
of things?
The best example of this is the, it could be aliens, why not? Yep. But the F-14 Tomcat is a huge example of this. And my brain is last couple of weeks, it's just been like all over
this.
The place.
I love this.
But
okay,
like the,
let's go.
You went from tube technology in like the 50s into the 60s, and then all of a sudden you're inventing the F-14 Tomcat that has a flight computer. It has a legitimate flight computer, and it has a processor way before Intel did anything. This F-14 had a processor that would control the wings, the swept wings and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Super fascinating. I'd love to hear you do an episode on the F-14. So then I went back and I sent an email to Jet Crouch and Scott Stimpert, two of our guests that both flew the F-117A. I'm like, hey, do you know anybody that used to drive the drive the F-14. It's weird. When you talk to pilots, sometimes they say drive. Like, I drive the, they don't say fly, they say drive. It's really strange. It's worth a question
like
of why
a,
they
like
do
a,
that.
A cool, yeah, I don't know. It's cooler to say that. Everyone says fly, so they're like,
something?
Drive that.
Or just use a different word.
It's like you don't drive a motorcycle or operate a motorcycle. You're like, I ride.
You don't,
you know,
though.
Instead
you
of
don't
that,
ride. When you go you for drive. A ride to do something, you're along for the ride. When you
that's
go on
I'm
a
saying.
Ride.
Like, ride isn't accurate, but a motorcyclist will always say, well, it's not instead inaccurate. Of driving or operating my motorcycle, I'm riding.
Kids are weird, too. Like, they take words.
kids these days.
They look at the words literally. Like, we were watching YouTube, and we watch science stuff on YouTube all the time. And it was something about gases, right? And Irene just goes, why is it called gas? It's not a gas, right? And I'm like, thinking about it. I'm like, yeah, well, it's just short for gasoline. But we call it gas instead of gas. We should just call it fuel. We should call it fuel.
I do anytime I can just say fuel. I need fuel.
Yeah, but then people think you're talking about diesel.
Not necessarily. Diesel's a type of fuel. Kerosene is a type of fuel.
I agree, but it's kind of, yeah, I don't know. Anyway, continue with your thought process and what you came up with.
I honestly kind of stumbled. Like, so it's either going to be, like, it's got to be something mechanical, like you say, so it can be understood, whether that is to reproduce or not, I don't know. So, like, helicopter would be pretty cool, but here's the other thing.
Jesus.
Can you personally, like, operate it, right? You have to be able to operate this machine to show what it is. Otherwise, just, like, look at the big metal thing, and they're,
it's
like,
also a very large
shiny
time machine to transport the helicopter. It's going to
need a lot
more energy.
You made a DeLorean into a time machine?
So you didn't
come
up with
the perfect structure.
You hit a dead
end. I think some type of flying machine would actually be the best. And you bring it back to Renaissance period. Because like you're talking about, Leonardo da Vinci had like the sketches of like his flying machines. And they like tried taping wings to people. And that didn't work well. So I think if you showed up with that, you'd be like, look, here's how it mechanically works. You'd have to have like a pre-war machine or something more simple. So there's not a lot of computers and stuff in it. And that, hopefully, I'd
my
be able
brain
to fly.
Just went to how you could bring a helicopter back. And what would Leonardo da Vinci build once he saw the technology? And I was trying to think of how would you get energy to run a helicopter? I was thinking, could you have a rubber band? Did they have rubber? I don't even know if they had rubber.
No, they didn't.
It's really tough. So that was my thought process is, did they have rubber? Did they have these things? Could they have made this?
I guess I don't understand why you need to have it mass produced. Oh, right. To get to the point where we don't have iPhones for some reason. That's going to prevent that.
No, I just was trying to like narrow. I was trying to create rules where it would become easier to like land on something.
Yes.
So I landed on.
I'm bringing an aircraft.
You're bringing a helicopter. I'm bringing a simple electric motor back to the 18th century into the 1700s.
Okay.
A simple electric motor because they could build it. Copper, iron, they could make the windings. They had copper. They had they had lead. They had all these different things. They had graphite, right? So you could do brushes if you wanted to. You could make a simple electric motor. And then I'm like, awesome. How do they power it? Enter the voltaic pile. Have you ever heard of a voltaic pile?
Yeah. I have. Yes.
Yeah. So basically we have Alessandro Volta, who in his relentless pursuit to one-up his competitor, Luigi Galvani. Have you ever heard of him?
No, I have not.
Luigi Galvani, which I wonder if it has anything to do with like galvanic. I wonder if he, because some of this stuff is kind of related with electricity. He was then at the time dabbling in dead frog electricity. So basically what he would do, he would cut. He would take a frog.
Hold on. Big dick energy. Nah, dead frog energy, man.
Dead frog energy. Galvani would dissect a frog's legs, leaving them attached to the body but separated from the rest of the frog. So like the leg is like just hanging off. So then he would hang
the frog alive?
No, the frog is dead. And ask, he did do this with bigger animals, but he would take a scalpel and you would see the sciatic nerve, right, from the spine going through into the leg. And he would take like a scalpel, like two scalpels, and he would touch like a metal railing with like another piece of metal. And when he did that and he touched the nerve, it would twitch, even though the frog was dead. Galvani observed that these muscle contractions occurred without any external stimulation other than the contact between the metals and the frog tissue. And what this is essentially
the Frankenstein frog. Frog. Yeah.
Well, the frog's the Frankenstein. He's just Galvani.
Frankenstein was the doctor, not the monster. Or is it vice versa? Dr. Frankenstein. The monster was just called the monster. Yeah.
When are we going to see a reboot of Frankenstein? Is that coming soon?
That's a good point.
I feel like that just happened.
We haven't seen that.
Maybe it hasn't.
Not really. When's the last time you've seen a Frankenstein?
I don't know. Almost never. So this is basically galvanic. The same process that causes galvanic corrosion is what's causing this. It's the dissimilar metals are causing the electrolyte, which is like the tissue in the blood in the frog, to react. And it causes like an electronic current. Yeah. Volta, Volta, a man of reason and science, refused to believe Galvani's claim that electricity was a biological phenomenon unique to living tissue. This is my rabbit hole. Okay, this is the black hole that I launched myself into.
Yes.
Instead, he set out to prove that electricity could be generated chemically. The result was the voltaic pile. Sophisticated at the time, now it's very rudimentary. Yeah. Stack of alternating zinc and copper discs separated by pieces of cardboard that were soaked in salty water. Salty water was the electrolyte. The pile produced electricity through a chemical reaction between the metals and the electrolyte, a kind of energy generation that didn't require any dead amphibians. Volta's innovation wasn't...
You know what sucks? This came out like a bunch of... I just want to see, like, instead of that, this galvanized guy... He just has a whole line of frogs hooked up with wires
dancing to music.
Yeah, check
with like
this
little
out.
With like little buttons where you can make their legs twitch like they're on the stage with the kicking.
No, I'm
ladies.
Saying the frogs are somehow powering his, like, he's making electricity via the frogs instead of this chemical.
It would be extreme millivolts. I did look into how
that's
many
why
frogs
you
it
have a
to...
lot of frogs, Chris. A
you
lot
can't.
Of them.
It is not feasible. I looked into it. One of my favorite things to do with ChatGPT is like look into like obscure numbers, and I did that a little bit with this.
But
like, how many frogs would it take? There's no amount of frogs that would run an electric motor. I already checked. It doesn't work. Did you ask it
to cite its sources? Because I feel like sometimes you ask for those types of facts, and it's like, actually, you're right. It's this.
Yeah,
one
you can
and not
correct
that
it over
one.
And over.
And yeah. Okay. Anyways.
So each metal in the pile acted as an electrode, with the zinc undergoing oxidization and the copper reduction, driving electrons around the circuit connected to the top and the bottom of the pile, causing current flow. This flow of electrons is a battery, which is what I needed to run my electric motor that I brought back with me.
Or you could just have two motors and one is hooked up to hydroelectricity, like a river.
You could, yes, but I'm
that'd be a lot go, easier.
It would be a lot easier, but then you might as well just run it off the windmill or the water wheel. You might as well just use that.
Whatever you are doing.
Like, how long is your extension cord going to be to to power the electric motor? At some point, they didn't have like strands of wire either, so you would have been running a solid copper wire, which would have been a hideous amount of resistance. Given over a certain amount of distance. What Volta essentially introduced was the concept of the battery, which not only revolutionized science, but also gave people a new way to accidentally shock themselves while experimenting. The voltaic piles...
What year was this, circa? Do you have the date?
1798, which sucks because guess who died 2 years before he invented this? Galvani
Leonardo?
Died. No, Galvani died.
The frog guy.
Frog guy ate the dust.
He could have made his frogs... like dance really, really well if he combined the battery with the frogs. Think about that.
So what do you think they can build using a voltaic pile and an electric motor? What do you think they can power?
Oh, man. What can't they power, Chris? I mean, it depends how big the voltaic pile is. They're going to build a car. We're going to build a car, Chris.
Let's get into it. I thought maybe we could just do huge voltaic piles, but turns out the more plates you stack, it just generates more voltage and the amperage does not change.
Okay.
So there's no additional amperage, which is the problem. I figured out what the largest voltaic pile that could be feasibly built in the 18th century is about 100 feet tall. It would have 10,000 voltaic plates. But that 10,000 cells would still only produce about 1 milliampere under ideal conditions.
That's it?
That's it. Each plate would probably produce about 0.76 volts. So that's 7,600 volts. But we know that's really only going to be 7.6 watts, because watts is amps times voltage.
Yep, so 7
which
watts.
Is
okay.
Lame. And then I'm that like, okay, lame. Well, that doesn't work. It powers nothing. Not even a dentist drill. No dentist drill. Yeah. No, it doesn't do anything. It literally, it can't like a little pinwheel.
You're not doing much.
It would be like a novelty experiment. You can't do anything. So then I thought about, like, could they do a lead acid battery, right? Which you could technically do a lead acid battery, but I kind of just turns out this is all just like a terrible idea and none of this would work. And then I That was it. That's as far as I got with this experiment.
Oh,
so,
that was it. Okay, so
I ran out
so
of
you're
time.
Not bringing you're not bringing the electric motor then.
Not bringing the electric motor, and then
you're
I did also
the lazy
think
boy.
About. I thought about different metallurgical processes too. Alloys. Yeah. I thought about explosion welding. Have you ever heard of explosion welding?
Explain it to me.
Have you ever heard of clad plates for like high pressure containers?
Okay.
So basically what they do is they take and you can explode weld. You can explosion weld steel and aluminum, for example.
Okay.
They would never go together. So what they do is they take
plates. Are you just calling
plates.
Forge welding?
No, it is not forge welding. What they do is they take these big plates of steel and they set it on the ground. And then they they spot weld little nubs on it.
Okay.
And then they put a plate of aluminum or iron or any metal you want, anything. Brass, you could, brass might not survive. But it was all these different kinds of metals that you could do. And then you take explosive and you brush it out 2 inches thick on 3 inches thick on top of these two metals. And then you just blow it up. And the force, you're so skeptical, but this is absolutely a process.
Not different than just taking a hammer and forging the two metals together?
Because it happens so fast that it forces all the air molecules out and becomes a clean, strong weld. It physically welds them together. The force is so insane that it welds them together, and the force of them coming together, because it goes from one end to the other. So they start the explosion at one end,
okay,
and it rapidly goes across the plate of steel or aluminum or whatever.
Are there videos of this?
Together. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Go look it up. Yeah, you can find it. And it rapidly goes across. So then as it goes across, it welds. And this all happens so fast that you can't even see it. The weld goes across the whole plate and it pushes the air out, which means it is then a clean weld. And this is what they use for high pressure tanks for chemicals and stuff like that is what clad is for.
Really?
So I thought about bringing different metal.
Yeah, what are you going to do with
technically
that?
Do that.
Okay.
Well, you could make a steam engine with a clad metal barrel that would then be able to withstand extreme temperatures and generate way more horsepower than any steam engine ever. And you could do that in the 18th century. You could have, you could bring forging. You couldn't do welding because you're certainly not welding with a voltaic plate. That would be shocking somebody with your finger.
Static welding, is that a thing?
You really, yeah. Anyway,
okay, I'm gonna share.
That's it.
I
ran out of time. Okay, what do you got?
Okay, but I really want to see what this whole explosion welding process is all about. Let's see if you can hear this.
3 minutes.
I don't know.
I cannot hear it, but you can see it, and that's
well.
All
you don't
I already
really need
it.
To. What are we doing here?
So it's in that tunnel, is where they do it. They do it inside of a mountain. Look at that. It fuses dissimilar metals together, and then they basically take this and they build high pressure stuff out of it, high pressure.
Whoa, is this the
uses.
Whoa?
Look at that. See, that's
what.
See, boom. You thought I was full of shit, and lo and behold,
I don't understand how this is better than. Okay, interesting.
And they mill it flat.
Really, yeah. The backer. Okay.
Yep.
Here we go. Here we go. This is what I was looking
there
for.
There it is. See, that's the slow motion. Bam, boom, it blows up. And then it slowly goes over there, pushing
slowly.
Out all the air
you
molecules.
You say slowly, but I think it's not slow.
Well, it's light speed, however long the...
It's not light speed.
What's the chemical reaction speed of something like this?
It depends on the chemical.
It's light speed. See, there's
it is
air
not
molecules
light
going
speed.
Out.
Yeah.
Stop sharing this. We got to move on.
No, I'm just... those are... Okay. That's, I guess, fascinating.
It's a really cool process. And you know what else is cool, Jake?
Well, AC Solutions is cool. That's what's cool. AC Solutions, which is our friend Austin Cacavo. You heard him on the podcast recently. They offer complete plug-and-play air conditioning conversion kits for your classic BMW, such as the E30, E28, and E24, and soon to be Porsche. Featuring OEM quality components with period-correct finishes and materials, their products are designed as drop-in upgrades to your old factory system, but with the performance of modern technology. Their products stem from hands-on design and development with a deep knowledge and passion for these vehicles. They're designed by enthusiasts for enthusiasts and can complete with a full warranty and quality instructions mirroring those of a factory manual. Check them out at acsolutions.co. That's acsolutions.co.
All right, I'm going to show you something. I want you to tell me what this is. Let me see if I can grab it, share it quick. Can you see this?
That is a Ferrari 308, I think, 308.
Okay, that is a Ferrari. Please let the judge note.
328, 348.
It's a 308. You say it's a 308. Okay, let the audience know that Jake has decided this is a
I think most people would think that's a 308. Sure.
That is a Ferrari.
Yeah, that's what I said.
308. No, it is not. It is a Mira kit car made out of a Fiero. And this is something that GM actually built on the side. The reason
it's
I bring that up.
It's supposed to look like a 308, right?
Well, it's an extremely good kit car. Anyway, I wanted to show that before I showed you the Craigslist car of the week.
Oh, boy.
Come on, man. Load. Is this really going to do this to me right now? Here it goes. Okay. Oh, my gosh. This is. All right. Let me share this. This is the car for sale of the week.
Okay. Are we seeing it? I'm not seeing it.
You should be seeing it now.
Okay. Okay.
1984 Lamborghini Countach replica. This is also.
I've seen this. I know this guy. I talked to this guy.
Come on.
No. I know exactly where this is. I've seen this car. I've talked to this guy.
Okay. Well, take it away, Jake, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know. This was a long time ago. I drove by and I was like, what the hell? And he's like, yep, it's a Fiero kit car. Sample picture of car style. Do you see it? Did you click through? Sorry, I can't see what you're sharing. So
It is pictures of this thing.
But did you click through? Yeah, sample picture. Yeah, well, that's not. Oh, my gosh. Okay, it's so terrible, Chris.
Please note, replica cars are not the actual Lamborghini Countach car, which can cost up to $500,000. So
just in case you were confused, he's laying it out. Yep.
Oh, man. Details. Color. Red. Two doors. Six cylinder.
Yeah.
Runs and drives 90%. Look at the windows.
When we
you Apple podcast fans need to hop over and start listening to this on Spotify so you can see this stuff every once in a while. We want you to listen to the podcast, of course, but you know, there's video there if you want.
It's just terrible.
Runs and drives. Okay. About 80% of the custom build work is done, although it needs some more work done. About 3 years ago, it felt like the front passenger side wheel bearing started wearing and brake line out. Will need to be towed to buyer's location. Needs front wheel bearing, some brake line work, a radio, maybe a new water line, instrument panel, door, and more. That's it. All of this. Look at this one here. A real eye catcher. This thing is, ladies and gentlemen.
Windows? It's so bad. Well, there's one angle I'm looking at where the whole roof looks like it's just like not
like fiberglass?
Being a roof. Like it's just sagging. However, please note that the seller said when we took the car to a car show near our house, people raced right past the shiny new Lamborghini cars to take a look at this much older model Lamborghini Countach replica car. Uh-huh. I'm sure they did. Because they were like look at that abomination.
Look at that car wreck. We better slow down and see if anybody died.
Oh, yep.
Which is, pretty much what
okay.
this is.
Okay, well. I know exactly where that guy is. I drove by. I stopped because I was like, what in the... Yeah.
I wonder if he uses it to tow the little camper there. You might as well. You might as well. Okay, moving on. Let's see if I can get back to my notes.
Let's talk about some news, Chris.
Yeah, let's talk some news. The Ford Bronco Sport owners are dealing with the latest recall totaling 22,270 units alongside the recall of 20,382 escapes, all due to the pesky issue of cracked fuel injectors. But wait, there's more. On the very same day, the Bronco found itself in the headlines once again, this time due to the passing of its most infamous owner, O.J. Simpson. So they announced the recall, and O.J. Simpson died at exactly the same time. I'm not sure if there's a coincidence for that or not.
There's definitely a correlation. Sure.
Yes. The Juice, as he was affectionately known, has sadly? I don't know if it's sadly.
He died.
He's dead. Has sadly, or maybe not sadly, left us at the age of 76 after a battle with cancer. don't think anybody really knew he was dying. He was famous for his football skills and glove-related incidents. His most lasting contribution to car culture was undoubtedly his leisurely cruise down a Los Angeles freeway in a white Ford Bronco in 1994. Do you remember this?
He did some acting. He did some acting as well, keep in mind.
Was it true crime? Was he a murderer?
No. No, he was in like a bunch of like not Leslie Nielsen. The comedy ones, like Naked Gun or whatever. What is that dude named?
Is that Leslie Nielsen?
Leslie Nielsen's the he's the guy that's Taken. I'm going to find
That guy sucks. The chase began when Al Cowling, Simpson's close friend and former teammate, picked him up from Simpson's home in Brentwood, Los Angeles, in Cowling's white Ford Bronco. I always thought this was OJ's car, his truck.
Yeah, I did, too. It wasn't his truck.
It was his buddy, AC. With Cowling behind the wheel and Simpson
OJ
in the back
and
seat.
OJ and AC.
Yeah. This is following AC Solutions. With Cowling's behind the wheel and Simpson in the back seat, the Bronco was spotted by the police, who recognized Simpson and began pursuit.
I'm going to have to interrupt this call. I understand we're going to go to a live picture in Los Angeles.
Look at that guy's face. Can you see this, Jake?
No, I can't.
Oh, can you hear it, though?
Yeah, I can.
Okay, so if you're listening, just like Jake is, and he can't see it for some damn reason, this is Larry King. He was previously interviewing this guy on the left, who looks like a naked man just walked right in front of him. He looks so perplexed and surprised.
Correct. Okay, this is Interstate 5, and this is courtesy of KCALR, one of our L.A. affiliates. Police believe that O.J. Simpson is in that car. Now they're telling me that they believe that this vehicle is registered to Al Cowling, one of O.J.'s oldest friends, a teammate at Southern Cal. And they believe that Al Cowling, who's the other person they're looking for, who was with O.J. earlier today, they believe that this is the car. We do not know this is the car.
So at the time, he had he basically had a gun to his head the whole time. And I listened to the transcripts. He had a cell phone in there. And OJ's like, I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't go back. They're trying to get him to throw the gun out of the truck. And like,
wow.
It was like, I didn't even want to play the audio because it was so uncomfortable and weird. But how dope is this Bronco? Do you know what his Bronco looks like? The white Bronco with the white matching. It's pretty dope.
Car. They're going south through Orange County, but nobody is pulling this car over. And we could only guess as to why not.
It's an amazing sight. Along the right-hand shoulder, people have pulled over, many of them carrying signs reading things like, Save the Juice, Go OJ. People are literally cheering him on as he travels northbound on the 405, and we can only assume.
So you can't see this, but what's happening is...
Tell me the context here of, like, why did the car chase start? They were trying to arrest him. Was this when...
He was all lined up. He was all lined up to, like, get dropped off with at the attorney general. He was all lined up.
Okay, so this is...
He decided to run.
After the trial.
Well, this is when he got charged. So he got charged with the crime. And charged with the crime, and then he just lost his shit.
Got it.
So what's happening in the video now is you have... Everybody on the opposite side of the freeway is at a complete stop. Everybody is at a complete stop. So just imagine, this is the 90s. This is the early 90s. Everybody somehow found out about this and found out that it was happening. They're all listening to the radio. This is pre-cell phone. Nobody's tweeting about this. Everybody's just finding out about it from analog sources, which I think is really fascinating that word was able to spread this fast, where people are pulling over on the side of the freeway with signs that say, Save OJ.
Yeah.
We assume that he plans to get off at sunset and go towards perhaps his home.
He's on the off-ramp now, coming up the off-ramp at sunset.
I mean, people were on bridges with signs as he went under. It's just crazy.
Making a left turn. The intersection is free, and he's clear, and now making his left turn.
So he went home and basically went to his house, and they arrested him there, and you know it was no big deal. But as news of the chase spread, it was broadcast on live television with news helicopters following the Bronco. And I was wondering, was like the helicopter car chase thing that's going on in Los Angeles all the time? There's always, like, if you tune in, there's always some guy running from the cops. Did that exist before this? Did OJ force this phenomenon? This slow speed chase lasted for over 2 hours, Jake, and it captivated viewers from across the country and marked the beginning of a saga that would dominate headlines for months to come. The Bronco itself became a symbol of that turbulent time, forever linked to the events surrounding Simpson's trial and the subsequent trial of the century. After the chase, the Bronco was impounded by the police and later returned to Al Cowlings, to whom it originally belonged. It changed hands several times over the years and even appeared on an episode of the reality show Pawn Stars. So I
The Bronco,
yeah. It ended up at a, it was later bought by some people. One of them was Simpson's former agent. It spent years in a Los Angeles parking garage before finally finding a home at the Alcatraz East Crime Museum in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, where it sits alongside Bundy's Beetle and the 1933 Essex Terraplane that belonged to gangster John Dillinger, and a 1934 Ford prop car used in the bloody death scene at the end of the film, 1967 film, Bonnie and Clyde.
So we talked about his acting career, and you were like, what was he in? The Naked Gun movies. He's a credited actor in 38 different movies, only three of which are actual documentaries about him. Like, he actually had a long acting career.
I'm sure he was great, too, in every single one of them. Until 1994. How many Oscars did he win?
Not many, as far as I know.
All right. Tell me a little bit about CSF before we get into some other news.
Yeah, let's talk about CSF. They offer cooling solutions with a rich history. They've always been at the forefront of quality products for a fair price. They've had their history and the company stretches for over decades. The highest performance and OEM plus cooling systems on the market. They offer over 3,000 different cooling applications for the most popular makes and models on the road, from classic copper and brass radiators for Land Cruisers, Jeeps, Datsuns, all the way to vintage 80s Mercedes, BMW, Audi, Porsche, and of course new vehicles, electric vehicle, also applications. It runs the gamut. Check out their expanding classic series lineup and be sure to check them out at csfrace.com or on social media.
All right. So I read this title of this next article, and I couldn't figure out exactly what it meant. So obviously then I had to click on it, read it, and it turns out it's interesting. Toyota will crush land speed record-setting Prius.
Okay.
I thought, like,
I didn't know there was one.
Well, here, I'll show it to you. I read it as that they had a land speed record-crushing Prius.
Oh.
So I couldn't. Here it is. I don't know if you can see it or not. You'll have to let me know.
I clicked on it myself. I can't see
it.
Yeah,
you can,
so
you can
yeah,
see
it's,
it there.
It's a land speed record Prius, like a salt,
yeah, there's,
flat,
yeah,
salt
racer. Flat Prius right there. And there's also another vehicle that we're going to talk about too.
Okay.
Everybody else.
But you're
see
right. Using the term crushing next to record is like, oh, it's crushing the record. No, they're actually crushing the car, supposedly.
In an expected turn of events that might crush the spirits of car enthusiasts as much as the cars themselves, Toyota has decided to bid a not-so-fond farewell to a couple of its museum pieces. Yes, you heard it right. Toyota is turning its heritage into scrap metal, including a land-speed record-setting Prius and its museum mate, a classic Cressida. And the Cressida is, like, just kind of cool.
Yeah,
it
is.
It's not that special. Like, it has different speakers in the door cards.
78. Yeah.
The 2003 Prius, a true trailblazer in the hybrid world, true, once hit a breezy 130.794 miles per hour at the 2004 Bonneville Speedweek.
That's it?
Well, top speed's 105. This
yeah,
week
like,
wasn't...
It has full, like, aerodynamic, like, smoothie wheels and, like, why... You'd think
what do you
it would
have
gone faster if they're
going
to prep
going
it.
It on. It looks
has,
pretty
it's
stock
lower,
other than
it has a smoothie wheels. Like, okay, so you're saying it's
that's
just
all
a
you
stock
can say.
Car.
Not okay. Really. They did do some stuff to it.
Like, it has a roll cage in it, I'm pretty sure.
And to be fair, when it set the hybrid record, what else was it going against?
Yeah, I guess.
An
I don't
escape
know. Okay,
hybrid?
Anyways.
The car was driven by Prius chief engineer Shiyuki Hori, Toyota North America's then VP of Technical and Regulatory Affairs, Fumiaki Kobayashi, and car and driver writer Aaron Robinson. The Skunk Works, let's not get carried away, team spent just 2 months modifying the hybrid, gutting the interior while adding a racing seat, harness, and roll cage. I could gut the interior a lot faster than 2 months. The suspension was lowered by 5 inches, and it rolled on special Goodyear tires made specifically for land speed record attempts. According to
Toyota, they also re-geared it, the final drive.
Yes.
That's why I'm like, why isn't it going any faster?
Well, they didn't really add much power. They just changed the voltage. It went from 500 to 550 so it could rev higher, I guess.
Okay.
I thought that would generate more power, but it just says so the system could rev higher, and then they changed the gearing. The Prius's unprecedented result opened a new hybrid class at Bonneville at a time when the gasoline electric technology was relatively new. So, yeah. Anyway, they're crushing it. I actually sent an email to, embarrassingly enough, do you know who makes the Prius?
Toyota?
For some reason, my brain was so broken that I sent an email to Honda asking them why they were crushing this car. And the lady emailed me back going, wrong manufacturer. We don't make the Prius. And I emailed her back being like, well, I hope you had a good laugh. And she said, it's Monday. Don't worry about it. What I was thinking. Obviously, I know that Honda doesn't make the Prius. Anyway, I did also email Toyota and they never got back. So I'm trying to figure out why are they crushing this thing. I'm sure it's a prototype. It probably doesn't have a VIN number, but surely you can sell this thing to a private seller and not just crush it. Apparently the Cressida was mint, but sadly when they asked if the cars were for sale, they were denied. They cannot even be parted out. The facility is under strict orders to crush the cars. I don't know. Just seems really, really, really sad that, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't really care about this car, but
no, I've heard that from several other times that like if a vehicle is pre-production and doesn't have a VIN, it gets crushed. Like it cannot exist. It has to be destroyed, which is bizarre to me. I don't know.
It's just why not keep it in the museum then?
Right. It doesn't have to be road legal.
Maybe they're getting rid of the museum. I have no idea. We have new engine regulations for F1 in 2026. And normally this
kind of knew
boring,
this was coming,
but now we know what they are. We know what they have changed. The 2026 regulations maintain the commitment to sustainability with fuels that will be fully sustainable. However, the engines are evolving to be more efficient, still capable of delivering a whopping 1,000 plus horsepower, but using less fuel. You're going to laugh. Part of this is.
Okay.
However, the engines, blah, blah, blah. The headline grabber this time around is undoubtedly the quote, override mode.
Okay.
This isn't just a fancy button to make the car go faster. It's a significant boost in power that temporarily allows drivers to hit speeds of up to 220 miles per hour. I think right now you see around 200 is like when you watch some racing, it's depending on the track, it seems like it's like 200. This surge comes from dialing back the combustion engine's output and supercharging the electrical component from 150,000 kilowatts to 350,000 kilowatts. The result, a burst of 470 horsepower from the electric side alone. So what have we done here, Jake?
We basically have made an electric car.
We are on a slippery slope. This is like we are standing. There's a hose running on a muddy hill and we are standing looking at it. We have just taken our first step. We have scaled back the combustion engine and increased the electric motor. What's 470 kilowatts in horsepower?
Stupid Europeans.
All right, 630 horsepower. So we're at 630 horsepower. But it's scaled down and we're scaling up the electric. I feel like this is the slippery slope.
Why scale down the internal combustion motor? Like if this
what
is
do you mean, why?
Pass or whatever they're calling it. Well, it says the surge, so you're making the if
it's
the
not push
gas
to pass,
motors
though. We don't know what it is. We only know that override mode exists. We don't know how it will be activated or used on track. We have no clue. We don't know if this is push to pass. We don't know if this is something that's going to be
either way, this is a mode that makes more power. But why are they then reducing the power output from the internal combustion engine?
Because they have a limit on the power they can make. So if they're going to increase the power of the electric motors, they're going to decrease the combustion engine.
That.
Yeah.
Okay,
also,
I didn't understand that.
They're adding lambda sensors. What's a lambda sensor, Jake?
Lambda sensor is like an O2 sensor, right? Lambda.
Apparently, we've had these since the 80s.
Yeah.
They will be now positioned in each exhaust secondary or in the turbine tailpipe. They must measure the air fuel ratio in the engine exhaust gases. I cannot believe
we did not have
O2 sensors.
Of course they did. That's weird.
It's a new edition of the regulation that these are there. They're positioned. What, it's there.
Just cutting edge technology here. Just, yeah.
Cutting edge. This weird. Is an O2 sensor, guys. I always thought F1 was special.
Yeah, it is like any. The cutting edge, but apparently it's not. Okay. Well,
tell me about Petrolbox. What do you got?
Petrolbox is your monthly service made specifically for the automotive enthusiast. Each month they carefully select items including tools, detailing supplies, apparel, garage gear, stickers, and publications to be sent right there to your doorstep. It's a curated selection of latest and greatest gear in the industry, and there's actually two different levels of subscription to choose from. The Petrobox Basic costs less than $20 a month, while the Petrobox Premium gets you even more gear for $39.95 a month. Check them out at mypetrobox.com, and you can also always use the code Overcrest. That'll get you $6 off your first month at order.
Miles Hudson, known for his Dodge Charger Hellcat SRT, dubbed. I wish locally. It would be kind of cool if, like, my car had a nickname locally. Like, oh, yeah,
it doesn't.
It would be kind of neat.
This, like, is the whole thing.
You can't
about...
give yourself a nickname. But if someone else gave your car a nickname, like, that happened all the time with old muscle cars. Like, you'd be like, oh, that's the
Like,
that's
race
the
cars. Yeah,
even,
the
like,
judge.
Guys that would go drag race down, like, downtown, their cars would get nicknames. This guy's SRT Hellcat is dubbed the Belltown Hellcat. Which is a super lame name. I probably could have came up with something better, but
yeah, because
maybe
it's
he gave it
just a Hellcat. Yeah,
maybe he gave it the name to himself. I don't know, but I think it'd be cool to have a nickname. You can't give a nickname to your own car.
Hold on. You're just saying this because now you're hoping someone will give your car a nickname and it'll catch on. You can't do that either. No, that is the dumbest thing ever. This is like giving your car a name. This is no different.
I don't like
doing what you're
that
talking.
Either.
No, be like, oh yeah, this is. Well, you did do
Wendy.
That. Jersey. Audrey, yeah. Aubrey or something, right?
And then I realized it was stupid.
It's so stupid, Chris. Like, they even talk about this in Top Gear. Like, you can't name your car.
It's
That's
almost
really dumb.
As stupid and as people that call their pets kids or that they are parents. I can't
that's really dumb.
Stand when people are like, yeah, I'm a dog dad. No, you're not. You own a dog. All right. Mm-hmm. Anyway. Police reports indicate
don't
that
name Chris's car. Do not do it. Or if it's going to be a name, it's got to be something really, really dumb to be embarrassing.
Miles Hudson, known for his Dodge Charger Hellcat SRT, dubbed the Belltown Hellcat, has been prohibited from driving his vehicle following charges of reckless driving. Despite the legal action, Hudson has continued to attract attention for the noise and speed of his vehicle, accumulating further traffic citations. So he still has his driver's license. But he's not allowed to drive his Hellcat. Police reports indicate that Hudson was pulled over in Seattle's Sodo neighborhood on March 30th after officers were alarmed by the deafening noise of his engine. During a subsequent stop, let's describe deafening. Is it like
okay? Because if you're going to take it literally, deafening is very, very loud. Like,
it is extremely loud.
The decibels required to literally deafen you.
Yeah.
Is a lot. A lot
My
more
version
than
of
any...
deafening and someone in the Seattle Sodo neighborhood that thinks they have a special connection to Mother Earth herself are completely different. they're not the same at all. During a subsequent traffic stop.
Twaffic. Twaffic is what you see on the Looney Tunes.
During a subsequent traffic stop on April 2nd, Hudson expressed excitement when an officer recognized him from his Instagram videos where he boasts over 700,000 followers, Jake.
Why?
However, as of this week, the 20-year-old is no longer permitted to drive the Hellcat, which has been a source of annoyance for Belltown residents and beyond due to its loud revving and speeding. Hudson pleaded not guilty to 2 counts of reckless driving in Seattle Municipal Court on Tuesday. So we don't know the outcome of this yet. Maybe we can do a follow-up. The charges stem from a February Instagram video showing Hudson racing another Dodge Charger at speeds of 107 miles per hour. I feel like that's almost like Austin Powers, where he's like 1 million.
Yeah.
You expect him to be driving a lot faster. I've hit 107 multiple times.
Well,
As part of his release conditions, Hudson is forbidden from committing any criminal violations. Driving without a valid driver's license and insurance, and driving the Hellcat. His attorney, Shelley Anderson, questioned the necessity of the vehicle restriction, arguing that it would hinder his ability to work. Anderson declined further comment when contacted by the Seattle Times. Judge Andrew Simmons upheld the restriction for the Hellcat, but allowed Hudson to drive other vehicles. You know what they should have done? It should have been like Top Gear, where they have the Safari Special, the African one, where the Beetle
and you have the shame car.
Yeah, yeah, you have to drive a Prius instead.
Yeah.
You have to drive a Prius instead of this.
This is very bizarre, and I'm actually questioning the legality of this because
it is unusual punishment.
Well, clearly I could see them saying the car is not road legal as is, right? Because it's apparently doesn't have exhaust up to whatever, you know, regulations or whatever else. That would make sense. You have to make the car road legal again.
But just saying you can't drive the car, how is that legal?
That can't be legal. Can someone else drive the car? Like, why can't his buddy get in the car and do the exact same thing? That's legal. That's ridiculous. And so he still has his license, because that would also make sense. Like, okay, we're just going to revoke your license. Yep. Which, have you ever lost your license, Chris?
Yes.
Yeah, I have too. Okay. We don't need to develop into it.
The second time I ever went on a date with Jesse, I got pulled over and ended up in jail.
Oh, my.
And I had to call her from jail saying, I'm sorry, I will not be able to make the date tonight. I am in jail.
You weren't arrested while you were like on the date. That's what I have pictured, is like you were on date with her and then got pulled over and arrested. That would be probably a better story.
Oh, man. Anyways, the stuff that happened in Brooklyn Park back in the day. I ended up getting it. Like, I had somebody chasing me with a gun, driving after me with a gun hanging out the window in Brooklyn Park. And I was in a Passat. I was in like a ABA 8-valve Passat. I don't remember. I probably did some douchebag thing. Probably cut him off or something, or flipped him off or whatever the case may be.
Did you know the guy?
No. Never seen him before.
Oh, okay. So this wasn't like a personal thing.
No. I ended up.
Well, he made it personal.
There were stoplights, and there was car stop there. And I remember going, I think. I was scared. Dude had a gun. I'm like, I think I can make it in between these two cars.
You threaded the needle.
I threaded at like 40 miles an hour. I was like, phew! And I threatened. That's how I got away. Right through there. The guy had a truck. And I was like, phew! It must have been.
Was the light red?
The light was red.
Like,
yes.
Like there was cars going like this. And so you threaded between them and then like this and whack.
Yeah. The guy had a gun. I was scared. I was very young. I was probably.
Did you get his license plate?
No, but the cops found him later.
Good.
And he went to jail. So.
Yeah, I would imagine. That's brandishing a deadly weapon. Yeah.
Jake.
Yeah.
Jake, have you ever heard of the Driver's Club?
I have heard of the Driver's Club.
It is a great way to support Overcrest. It costs $5. $5. There are thousands and thousands of you that listen to this podcast and are freeloading deadbeats. Deadbeats, $5. It's the same cost as a Red Bull or a coffee. That's it.
That's true.
All of you guys that get coffee every single day, just don't get the coffee one morning, have a headache, and support your friends.
Well, you don't need to have a headache, but hopefully, you know, Overcrest can like do more to energize you than caffeine would.
I like that.
Right?
I like that.
Yeah.
That's much more positive than me calling everybody a deadbeat, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah. That's kind of the difference, the dichotomy between us. Just goes right for the negative.
This episode is going to continue. We're going to be talking about carburetors. We're going to be talking a little bit about the air water event and what it took to plan that and put that together. We'll keep going here. We will see you next week. I'm going to play you a clip.
You are smart because you made
it. Smart and amazing. I'm going to play you a clip, and this is from my Instagram. You're doing stuff like this, and you're trying to diagnose these stupid carburetors, you think, it's doing this little thing, so then is it the idle circuit, or, man, it's driving a little bit like this. Is it in the progression circuit? Is it the main circuit? Does it run a little bit better if it's wide open throttle? Is it better at idle? It's just a constant menagerie of accessing historical knowledge of other times carburetors have fucked me over. That's what owning carburetors is. What fucked me last time, and how does it apply to my newfound knowledge of how I'm being fucked again? That's it. That's carburetors in a nutshell. You want to deal with that? Get a pair.